Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and today on the show, I have owners George and Debbie Crave and their daughter, Roseanne, of Crave Brothers Farmstead Cheese, located in Waterloo, Wisconsin. Hey guys, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, right off the bat, everyone understands it's a family business. I would like to throw it to, how do you guys make decisions in your house? How do you say you love being in a family business? How do you feel about that? Who should take that first? George, Debbie, or Roseanne? I don't know how you choose.
I'll cover that first. And then I'll see if Debbie agrees with me. First of all, we started out as a large family, the Crave family down in Beloit, down in southern Wisconsin. And then we moved to Waterloo here 40 years ago. And we started our dairy farm here. And so I've been working with my brothers and my family my whole life, you know, either with my dad back in Beloit, picking the garden, whatever it was. So we were always working together as a family. And then, milking the cows and driving the tractor and fixing equipment and working and all that. So you just learn to work together. And then about 20 years ago, we built a cheese factory where Debbie came home and started working with me as a partner in the cheese factory, where she was in the marketing and I was doing more of the cheese. And it's been working really well for us. We complement each other, and that's what it's really all about. Now we have our daughter, Roseanne, that's in the business, and our son, Brian, that's a cheesemaker, our niece, Beth, that works in customer service, and then Patrick, our son in cows, Jordan, Andy, nephews, brother Tom, Mark, and Charlie.
So George is naming a lot of people.
Yeah.
That it's a family business. It can be exhausting because you're always involved with a family business. You're always thinking about it and talking about it. So we pretty much schedule time where we don't talk about it, where we do have fun, do other things, go up north, go visit other family or friends. I did spend 20 years in marketing and PR in working in Madison. That's why George says she came home. It's like, I have been home. I just worked quite a ways away. And I was so happy to have that other experience to draw on and other people. George, on the other hand, has always only worked with family. And that's good. And that's not always so great. It's challenging. So you really make yourself find other people outside the business to work with, whether it's coaches, counselors, experts, other people to draw on for their experience and to motivate you. Otherwise, you kind of can get stuck spinning. And that's what's great about bringing. So we bring Roseanne back, and she's a fairly new college graduate with some experience in the industry. And it's refreshing, exciting. I love energy and enthusiasm. And that's what she brings.
Roseanne, you feel the same way as your mom there?
Yes. So I've grown up with our family company. I remember when I was little, we started to build the factory, and I would come here after school every day, and I've worked here in high school, middle school, some of college, and also worked, yes, within the industry at a couple other cheese companies. But yes, I really do enjoy working with my family, and especially my parents.
Yeah.
They've always been some of my biggest supporters, as you would imagine.
Sure, sure. Yeah, and I bet for the holidays, I have this idea in my brain that like all of you are making cheese dishes, and there must be some competitive cheese dish that one of you is making. Is there one that stands out for the Crave family?
It really does depend on, you know, the holiday and the season. All of our cheeses are so easy to use for various recipes. I would say that at most family functions, we'll tend to use our mascarpone, which is a sweet Italian cream cheese. And everyone's favorite dessert is our chocolate mascarpone pie.
Oh, my goodness.
But at Christmas, we made a caprese salad. And this year it was a wreath. You can make it shaped like a candy cane. But Roseanne did a great job making it into a wreath. And, you know, we had a little trouble finding fresh, great-looking basil in Wisconsin in December. So we used some fresh spinach leaves, and they made it look awesome. So, yeah, we're always who can do what and what's creative. That creative factor is a little competitive factor for all of us.
I hope so. That makes everything more interesting, you know. I'm glad that that's sort of there. So I'd like to talk about your cheeses and the Crave family cheese line. Maybe that I should throw that to George. What sort of cheeses are you guys currently making?
Well, we make fresh mozzarella, the soft pasta filata that we make that in all the different sizes, perlini, siligini's, bocconcini's, ovolini's, 8-ounce balls, 1-pound logs, sliced logs, 5-pound loaves, curds. And so we make those every day. We have two different lines. We call it line one. That's on line one most of the time. And then we make queso Oaxaca, braided string cheese on line two. We make many thousand pounds of that a day also. And then we make our mascarpone. We made mascarpone just an hour ago. I finished up with the mascarpone. That's the cream cheese that Roseanne was talking about. And then we'll make cheese curds about once a week. And that's really about it, but so many different sizes and shapes and variations of those two simple cheeses. But it really makes it a product that's available to many different groups out in the market, which gives us a lot of flexibility on who we sell our products to.
And, you know, I'd like to point out, you're not from Italy or Mexico. So, like, how did you, which may be a little obvious, how did you get into the Italian style pasta filata cheese making?
Right. That's a often asked question, because here we're in Wisconsin and you think of us as the cheddar heads. And if you saw me, I'm a 6'2", retiring redhead that has French, German, Irish, English heritage. And Debbie is half Italian. But when we started thinking about making cheese, we did market research like anyone would. Went to some different people and they says, what kind of cheese are you going to make? And it's like, boy, that's a good question. So we did some market research, and 21 years ago, fresh mozzarella was really a in its infancy. You know, we hardly knew what it was. I thought it was two-day-old string cheese when they were telling me about fresh mozzarella. But then we found out that it's a soft cheese. And then Debbie and I remembered we did see that in one of our travels to Italy years earlier with some of Debbie's work in marketing. We were in Italy and we saw this mozzarella, and it was really different from what we viewed as our cheddars and our Colby's here in Wisconsin. So that's where we got into it. And it just expanded into the queso Oaxaca. And it's, they're both complementary types of cheese.
And Kara, I come from working in state government and marketing and the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. So I was pretty familiar with all the resources. We are lucky in Wisconsin to have these great resources, from the university to, well, they have the Center for Dairy Research to the Wisconsin Milk Marketing Board. They call themselves Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin now. They do trade shows, bring buyer groups, offer some marketing programs that really do help all of us. And yeah, I'm half Italian and I love cooking and I have family in Italy. So George and I have hopped on a plane and traveled to Italy, even with Roseanne, quite a bit. And we've looked at equipment and met with cheese companies. So we really do have a sense of the history, tradition, the heritage behind our cheese, even though George didn't come from Italy with no. with a secret recipe.
Yeah, I would imagine. And I guess in 20 years ago, I understand, like George mentioned, it was just starting the mozzarella movement. But it may not have been, you know, as easy to find a fresh mozzarella with a shelf life, that could make it out there. So have you seen now in the last decade an expansion of that amongst customers and their knowledge of this cheese?
Absolutely. Almost any store you walk into, I don't care if we were in New Orleans or we're in Florida, you know, Colorado, you walk into a store and there's mozzarella's there. And have to be truthful, early on, 20 years ago, the retailers were very skeptical about the short shelf life of the water pack, Silaginis and Bocconcinis. They were very skeptical that they could keep the rotations fresh and get it used up. And then they realized people are asking for it. It's another SKU. It's a high volume item. And they made it all work. We made it work. You know, you go through a couple of different trucking companies that couldn't figure it out. And we worked through the logistics and worked with the transportation and the warehouses that understand the movement. And things are much more sophisticated with the barcodes and everything else that's out there now on shipping containers and on the boxes. So very much more streamlined type of from orders to making it, trucks come in and away it goes off to the market. So very easy to say seamless now, but initially if I think back, it really wasn't very seamless. It was quite a bit of work.
I'm sure logistics and technology have caught up to you now, but I cannot even imagine years ago tracking that shelf life. It must have been, I commend you for your organization actually on this, because I'm sure it wasn't, I don't know if it was Sharpie marker or what, but I'm sure it was not easy. I wanted to ask you, like, what is the milk? I know it's cow's milk, but what kind of breed a cow and how much weight are you guys pulling together to put this production together, actually?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right across the road from the cheese factory is our farm where we milk 1,100 cows on the home farm. We milk 800 on another farm across down the road. And most of that milk comes to the cheese factory. We milk the cows, the milk's refrigerated. And then once a day, we swing a few lines and directly pipeline it from the home farm here, right, 340 feet underground to the cheese factory. So we have the Holstein cows, big black and white productive cows that we love. And they've been really good for us and good to us. And our son now, Patrick, he's in charge of the cows and does a terrific job over there. But very high producing cows that come over the cheese factory. We have about it for your listeners. We have about 4.2% butterfat milk. Now, if you go to the store and whole milk is about 3.2% butterfat, where they take, they'll still skim some of the fat out of. Of course, 2% is 2% butterfat. So our milk has twice as much butterfat and in it than your 2%. But that whole milk with a lot of protein, 3.3% protein, makes really good cheese and a lot of cheese on a per hundredweight basis. We look at our milk as a measuring, like a bushel of corn or a yardstick meter. We use the hundredweight as a measuring of how we measure our milk.
And when we first started, we thought it was great if we were making three sizes of fresh mozzarella. You heard George naming all those Italian words. It means their different sizes are egg size, golf ball size, cherry size. We said, oh, great. That's all we need. Oh, no. Now we make pearl size, medallions, the 8-ounce ball. But actually, the great part is that customers like different sizes for different applications. So for the famous Caprese salad, you would have a medallion, but the little pearl size are perfect sprinkled on a pizza, and cherry size are nice skewered with cherry tomatoes. So amazingly, consumers have kind of pushed and told us, well, here's what we want. So we just keep adding these sizes, which means, you know, getting more equipment, specialized equipment from Italy. And the other thing is we're beyond tiramisu for mascarpone. Everyone knows mascarpone for tiramisu or vice versa. And we're so not trying to be that only in that recipe. We love coming up with creative ideas using our mascarpone. So Roseanne mentioned our chocolate mascarpone pie, and we have some other favorite recipes like a mascarpone mushroom soup and even a pizza with dollops of mascarpone on it. So it's fun for us to create demand and excitement beyond some of the traditional ideas that you would think of for fresh mozzarella and mascarpone.
Sure. And actually, I mean, this may be a silly question. I don't know. Is mascarpone something that's used in sauce making too? Does it hold up to high temperatures, or is it, it's just more like a fresh or a mix in type of product?
Yes. We truly promote it that way, mix with pasta, make a fettuccine Alfredo with mascarpone. Traditional Italians might not do that, but we've had a couple, maybe two or three recipe contests. We have one coming up this coming year. And those recipe contests have given us some great creative ideas, like you're talking about, for sauces or different applications for the cheeses. And we always stir mascarpone into soup or a sauce with pasta. Or I mentioned little dollops on pizza, or we have a new recipe, an asparagus tart that has different cheeses on it, not just ours, and then some dollops of mascarpone, and nothing like it. Adds a lot.
It sounds lovely. And how can people apply to your contest? What's the best way to do that?
So on our website at cravecheese.com, we have a tab specifically made for information on how to enter. So people can go directly to our website, and it will share that we have two different categories. We have one for professional chefs and then one for consumers. So you can enter any kind of dish and it has to use one of our cheeses, and super easy to enter. And we have cash prizes, and it'll close March 21st, actually. So coming up, and it is open now for entries.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm just going to say to the listeners, guys, we're going to take a quick break. You guys can apply to the recipe contest at cravecheese.com. Roseanne just gave you a bunch of the rules, so I hope some of you curd nerds out there apply. This is very exciting. I love it. All right, everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd, and we'll be right back.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineurs on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
All right, everyone, welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and today on the show, I have the Crave family. This includes George, Debbie, and Roseanne. I'm really loving it. It's so exciting to hear how they run their family business in Wisconsin. And actually, in a pre-interview with George, I had a great conversation about how climate change and sustainability is also a big part of their business model. Part of our theme of this season on Cutting the Curd of the 2022 season is to think about how we can be better with changing the cheese industry and be more helpful, you know, protecting our environment and just doing better overall. So, George, I know you mentioned, how is it that the company is working to, you know, be better to the community and work with the environment better?
Well, starting out as dairy farmers and farming the land and growing our crops, the corn, the alfalfa, the soybeans, we're always rotating crops, always keeping something growing on the soil. And then when those crops are harvested, we feed them to cows. And of course, one of the byproducts of feeding a cow is the waste or the manure. And that always gets recycled back to the fields to be the fertilizer to grow next year's crop. So we've always been, I like to call the original recyclers. And I say we were green before green was groovy. Because farmers have always, we're really the front line of environmentalists when we're out there working with the land, working with our cattle, and then of course making food. So always looking at how to be more, I don't want to use the word sustainable, but repeatable and always continuous improvement. So we've always been doing that. And about 15 years ago, we took it a step further and put in a methane digester, which is where we take all the waste from the farm and the cheese factory and put in these large tanks, 750,000 gallon tanks to be exact. We have two of those. And the byproduct of that rapid decomposition of that biomass is methane gas, which is highly combustible, and it powers a huge internal combustion engine, just like it's in cars out there, only this is a huge 800 horse engine that is powered off the methane, not diesel or gasoline, but the methane powers this big engine that in turn turns an electromagnetic generator that generates enough electricity to power the farm, the cheese factory, and about 300 homes in our community. So that's a big step that we're using the methane off of our waste to make green energy, renewable energy. And that's running right now. I look out the window and you can see the machine running and runs almost all the time. And then a byproduct from that, what goes in must come out, is the little fibers from the cow feed that come back out, and they're further processed into the cow bedding. That's what the cows lay on, is the old fibers from the corn, the soybeans, the wheat, the brewer's grain, malt sprouts, wheat mid, everything that the cow ate, the fibers come back out and go underneath them for bedding. So always looking at that. Recycling our water at the cheese factory is a big part of it. Also, that all goes back to our fields and to irrigate and grow the crops for next year and the current crop. So we're always looking at what can we do with what we have? What can we do better? Continuous improvement. And we've always had that model. I think most farmers do, because it's really, there's very thin margins in farming and agriculture. And the only way to really make a profit, make a living off of it, is really being very conservative and conscious of all of our inputs and what we're actually harvesting off the land and how we leave the land.
Yeah, I really like what you said about that. We need things to be repeatable. And I think you just made a lot of dairy farmers, cheesemakers, wish lists a little more clear now for future growing, I'd say.
One thing George didn't mention is our Produced with Renewable Energy logo, did you?
Okay. I
listen to him and then I don't listen to him. So a few years back when we knew we were getting this digester project going, we said, well, this is really cool. We should tell our customers. How do we tell our customers? Put a little logo on our products. We have a beautiful little logo. It's a calf with a green leaf tail. And the logo is a circle and it says produced with renewable energy. And that's really to tell people a little more about their food, how their food is produced, and our story. And hopefully maybe it even makes them go to our website and learn more, because everyone's so interested now in being sustainable, being green, knowing more about their food. So I'm just letting you know there's that aspect too. We're really proud of our story, and that was one way for us to develop it. We even trademarked that logo.
Oh, smart.
Just to keep it as ours.
Yeah, no, that's smart. I'm going to have to double check. And, you know, packaging has so many messages on it. I'm going to now review it after this program, because that's very cool. I wanted to ask you guys also, what are you doing for the people community? Are there programs or incentives that are going on in Wisconsin that you also help promote to better the community?
Well, we participate. Yeah, with the Wisconsin, well, now it's Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin. They have different cost sharing with some of our labeling and some of our packaging, that when we have 10 trade shows, we are in their booth along with a lot of our fellow medium-sized cheese makers are in the Dairy Farmers of Wisconsin booth. So that's what we like to participate. And we can always learn from each other when we are in these types of having these activities, some of these sales meetings. And we really dearly miss that with the shutdown, what we've been experiencing for almost 2 years now, that we just have friends that we are unable to see or talk to and learn what they're doing or ask them questions about different equipment or different packaging, different inputs. You know, what's the cost of whatever they're dealing with Are they going up? Are they getting the supplies they need? Because we're all in this, we're all in the same boat where we're dealing not only with the milk we use, but we use cardboard, we use the plastics, we use the different products to make the labels and the inkjetting. And it's really important that we really are thinking ahead now to make sure we have the supplies. It used to be about a 3 week lead time almost on any of our supplies. Now it might be a 6 week, sometimes a 2 to 3 month lead time on any particular supply. And then of course it's not the supplier's fault, but it's the whole supply chain all the way back to the glue that might go on the tape. It's really unfathomable that we're really in this situation now.
Yeah, no, I know everyone's from the retail level to the producer level is feeling this logistic breakdown. You mentioned, COVID and COVID protocols. How is that doing now for you guys? Is it easier? Since I first talked with you, I know you had a lot of strategies with the staff and everything. Has it improved?
As far as staffing goes, Kara, we required all of our employees to be vaccinated, and they are. People choose whether or not to wear a mask. And we have a little bit of a policy, too, if you've been around someone that's sick or you yourself are. It's worked okay. People feel safe. We want a safe, good working environment for our employees. And we need to make cheese. People want to go to the store and buy cheese, and we have milk at the farm, and we need to use it. So we're proud to be essential employees, to be important in the food industry and part of feeding America. And we've certainly made this work, but we're moving forward. We're not over worrying about anything. If someone's sick, we provide paid sick leave and vacation time, and we're making everything work. It's so much better now than in 2020 when this first happened. Everyone was in a panic. We're calm. We have policies. We just implement them and we move forward. And we still had a employee Christmas party at Christmas. And we're really glad that we did that. Everyone needed just kind of a fun event. And we'll have something this summer. And in fact, next fall, even a little celebration for our 20th anniversary, a community celebration. So we're being positive and open-minded because, as George mentioned, we miss getting together. We do have a trade show coming up in a week or so, a food industry trade show, and we're looking forward to it just to get together with buyers and our colleagues in the industry to see how everyone's doing and what's new.
Yeah, I completely understand. I'll be there myself, so I'll have to stop by and say hello, actually. And I also want to mention congratulations on your 20th anniversary. That's amazing. I mean, that's definitely a milestone. The other thing I wanted to ask about was someone mentioned to me, Deb, that you were once a Dairy Queen or are a Dairy Queen in Wisconsin. I would like to know more. What does that mean?
Yeah, we have a program in Wisconsin called Alice in Dairyland that's been around since the state centennial, since 1948. Way back in 81, 82, I was Alice in Dairyland, fresh out of college. Oftentimes, these young women are college graduates with some marketing experience. You go around the state promoting Wisconsin agriculture, not just dairy, but certainly dairy is a big part of it. We did cranberries and mink and maple syrup and other industries too, but I sure learned a lot about cheese during that year, and it's been fun to draw on, and it was a fabulous experience. A lot of traveling around Wisconsin. I was lucky to travel throughout the U.S. a little more, so some Alices have done that. We have a great camaraderie, our group of former Alices, and in fact, there's the event this May for selecting the new Alice will be a kind of a reunion for many of us, and we all try to get together. So it's fun. It's a 1 year job and been a few years, but it was part of my job resume. Yes.
It sounds like a lot of work, honestly. And I know Wisconsin has very high expectations for people related to cheese. So I feel like you took on a pretty big responsibility by doing that.
Yeah.
Did that help?
I think it was more than I thought.
I am sure it was. I was going to throw it to Roseanne now. Is there like another special pairing that we can tell the listeners about that'll leave them hungry for their next crave mozzarella or mascarpone maybe?
Sure. I could touch on even just a dessert cheese board. So that's something that I discovered during the hype of, you know, cheese boards. And I utilized our mascarpone and our chocolate mascarpone. And it's super easy to use for different social events because you can put anything with it. I like to put different cookies, berries, chocolates, caramels, because our mascarpone, both our chocolate and our traditional, pair perfectly with anything sweet.
That sounds awesome. I'm looking forward to actually trying that because I don't think I've ever had chocolate mascarpone. So I'm trying to imagine the flavors right now. And it sounds fun. I can imagine berries going very well with it. So this has been great, guys. I want to say thank you for coming on the show. I have one final question, which is to the cheesemakers and dairy farmers out there, do you have any last words of great advice for them during this time period or to help them grow their business maybe?
Well, I think right now the dairy markets finally has a lot of strength behind it. There's very strong butter markets. We're still able to produce open and freely here in America and the U.S. and so many other countries are under pressure to reduce their herd numbers. They have urban encroachment, which makes it difficult on animal agriculture. So we have a good supply of milk here in the U.S. and our markets are strong. We still export a lot of our markets out there. And I think just making sure that it's really dairy, that it's really milk. Milk has the calcium in it. I read something just yesterday that 40% of the available calcium in the food chain comes through dairy. So get your calcium, get your vitamins, your riboflavin, and a terrific muscle protein also in dairy products. And I think we have a bright future. Animal agriculture has a bright future, and there's very good people out there working with it and using very current, scientifically proven production methods to produce our food and keep it on the shelf, keep it producing every day through thick and thin. We've been successful at that.
Mm-hmm. And just my spin on your question, Kara, is we have associations. We have a Wisconsin Cheesemakers Association and even a Wisconsin Specialty Cheese Institute. They're great member resources, but they're good networking too. We have little events or we tour a factory or we have a speaker. And that has kind of helped us through all of this turmoil and change because we have colleagues in the industry. When George left dairy farming to become a cheesemaker, he was kind of sad. He really missed farmers because they share so much. But we have found the cheese industry to be just as open and sharing as much as they can and friendly. And we love that. We love getting together with our friends in the cheese industry.
Yes, thank you for saying that. I think the cheese industry is one of the most close-knit communities that I've ever been a part of, and I can hear it in the program when I interview people like yourselves. So I just want to say thank you all for coming on the show today. This was really awesome to hear your words of advice and insight about cheese making. I just want to tell our listeners out there, you can find them at thecravecheese.com or on Instagram at cravecheesellc. Am I right, Roseanne? Did I get that right?
Yes, that's correct. And also on Facebook at cravebros.com.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and eat more cheese.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hi, listeners. We want to tell you about a podcast we're really digging. It's called Christopher Kimball's Milk Street Radio. Every week, they travel the world to find the most fascinating stories about food, including children who harvest cod tongues after school in Norway, and a detective who tracks down food thieves. And on Milk Street Radio, you can always find the unexpected. The comedian who ranks apples using an elaborate 100-point system, the secret history of grocery stores, and how to eat your way through Italy. They also interview the most beloved names in food like Jacques Pepin, Sola Awaili, Jose Andres, Jet Tila, Ina Garten, Nigella Lawson, and Padma Lakshmi. Plus, co-hosts Christopher Kimball and Sarah Moulton do live calls with listeners and answer their questions about ingredients, techniques, and culinary mysteries. Like, why roasting a leg of lamb made one caller's oven explode? Ever wonder why your bread won't rise or your souffle falls flat? Chris and Sarah have the answers. You'll also hear from a rotating cast of contributors, including Kenji Lopez-Alt, Cheryl Day, Dan Pashman from The Sporkful, and Alex Inouz, the French guy cooking from YouTube. Take a listen at 177milkstreet.com/radio or just search your podcast app for Milk Street Radio.